Welcome to NBA Talk with Isaac Wolf. I am your host, Isaac Wolf. Let's recap the end of the first round and a little bit of the second round. Last Wednesday, three series were clinched. The Jazz-Grizzlies series, the Jazz won that 4-1 with a 126-110 victory in Game 5. I didn't really watch any of this game, some highlights, I guess. The Jazz got off to a quick start, and the Grizzlies couldn't keep up, basically, is what happened. Donovan had 30 and 10 assists. Ja, 27, 7, and 11. Spectacular debut playoffs for him. The Grizzlies, you know, they were just too inexperienced in this series, and they'll get better as Ja and Jaren and Brandon Clark and all those pieces develop. Sixers-Wizards, Philly without Embiid in Game 5. Ben Simmons started at center, pulled a Magic Johnson, 19 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists. Seth Curry channeled his inner Steph, 30 points. Tobias Harris had 28. Russell Westbrook, 24, 8, and 10. His incredible season comes to an end. Bradley Beal had 32. What those two did to bring this team back from 15 games below 500 to the 8th seed is incredible. Beal scoring, Russ's triple-doubles, their effort on a nightly basis to turn around what looked like a completely lost season. I mean, I thought it was a complete bust considering they traded for Westbrook at the beginning of the year, which I thought was an upgrade over Wall. And it looked early on like they weren't going to make the playoffs, but what they did was, you know, something to commend. And then Knicks-Hawks, 103-89, the final score in Game 5 of that one. The Hawks won, of course. Trae Young, 36 points, 9 assists. The Knicks offense, again, not good, not productive, just 37% from the field. That's why the Knicks lost this series. They had no offense. They had a terrific defense, but they did not have an offense. Julius Randle didn't show up. 18 points and 11 rebounds a game compared to 24 and 10 during the regular season. He was just, I mean, if it's a small sample size, but as of right now, he's not a player who levels up come playoff time. Derrick Rose did, but Julius Randle did not. No one else did. Problems on the offensive side of the ball just screwed New York. They need more weapons. They need shot creators. They need shooters. They need guys who can drive to the basket and get a bucket whenever they want. I mean, the Knicks are on the right track. I would compare their situation to where the Nets were a few years ago when they were, I believe, like the seventh seed with D'Angelo Russell and all them. They have a star. Knicks had Randle, Nets had Russell. They just need a superstar. They need a second star to go with Randle, or, you know, Randle leaves and two Hall of Famers come and join like the Nets, like what happened with the Nets, but it's probably not going to happen. Anyway, and they need better shooters. So the Hawks, they play the Sixers in round two. Embiid's health is everything in this series. I really can't give a prediction even after game one because I just don't know what Embiid's going to be like throughout the series. I gave you my opinion on the injury already, but too much is unknown right now for me to make a prediction about that series. Game one of that series, Hawks-Sixers. The Hawks got going with a 17-0 run in the second quarter. In the second half, the lead went from 26-3. The Sixers cut it all the way to 3 with a minute left. They played so well in the second half, but it wasn't enough. Trae Young threw a lob to John Collins that sealed it. That was pretty impressive if you saw that play. 128-124, the final score. Trae Young, 35 points, 10 assists. I believe it said he was the first Hawks player with those numbers since the 1960s or something ridiculous like that. I really didn't believe it, but he's big time. Trae Young is officially big time. He's a borderline superstar, and we are seeing the revolution right now. We are seeing all the young players begin to like truly take over in the league and like shine in the playoffs. Devin Booker leading the Suns over LeBron. Jason Tatum scoring 50 points in game 3 against the Nets. Trae Young, Luka Doncic, what he did against the Clippers. Donovan Mitchell, Ja Morant leading the Grizzlies to the 8th seed. I mean, we're seeing the beginning of the process of, you know, the passing of the torch, so to speak. LeBron lost in the first round. KD still reigns in Brooklyn. He's really the last of the old faces, if you want to call that, of the league left. That whole Nets team is Harden, Kyrie, and Durant. But, I mean, even Embiid and Simmons and Giannis, they're all relatively young compared to those guys. Trae Young has put his name near the top of that conversation. He's putting people on notice. And he really didn't get a chance to do stuff on the big stage, at least in the NCAA tournament, because he lost in the first round. But in the NBA playoffs, he's showing that he's a problem. I have a lot of respect for what Trae Young has done. Ben Simmons, let's talk about him. He had 17 points and 10 assists, 7-7 from the field. Perfect. 3 of 10 from the free throw line. The Sixers lost by 4. Simmons missed 7 free throws. This is inexcusable. It's not, you know, it's not like it's the only reason they lost. Rivers didn't adjust. Doc Rivers didn't do anything to counteract Trae Young's onslaught from 3. I mean, he put Danny Green on him. That's not going to work. You need Matisse Thybulle or Ben Simmons on him. I really don't understand what they're doing. And then obviously, you know, the lack of 3-point shooting. I think they only made like 10 threes in game 1. If Ben Simmons makes 8 out of 10 free throws, they win the game. 7 out of 10, it's tied. This is just ridiculous. Ben Simmons has to learn how to shoot. The jump shot, that's another story. Whatever. You're good enough at finishing at the basket and getting to the paint at will that it's not that big of a deal. But free throws. Free throws just take practice over and over and over. Like anything does. I mean, it's going to be a little bit less practice than retooling your entire jump shot. But maybe the jump shot isn't as crucial. It would most certainly be beneficial. But free throws are. Ben Simmons should be shooting at least 300 free throws between today and tomorrow before game 2. If Philly goes down 2-0, I don't think they come back. The Hawks are going to be at home for games 3 and 4, and that's too dangerous of a situation for the Philadelphia 76ers to put themselves into. They have too many weapons. Embiid's health is still a question. Yes, he had 39 and 9 in game 1. That's a phenomenal performance, but it was just wasted. I mean, the Sixers should treat game 2 like game 7. I don't think they come back from down 2-0 if that happens. Let's talk about Mavericks Clippers game 6 in the first half, a defensive battle, 48-45 LA. Reggie Jackson 15 points. His offensive production kept LA in it early. In the third quarter, the Mavericks went up 67-60, but then Kawhi himself responded with an 11-0 run alone. He had 18 points in the third quarter. Dallas responded to that with a 10-2 run, 77-73 after the third quarter. Fourth quarter, Kawhi continued his takeover. 8 points in the row in the final 3 minutes to close it out. Leonard finished with 45 points. 104-97 the final score. The Clippers win. And for the first time in NBA history, the road team won the first 6 games of a playoff series. For the Clippers, the starters really did everything. And there were no bench points until Luke Kennard hit a floater with about 10 and a half minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Kawhi, this was the game that everyone needed to see from him. After winning the championship in 2019, I called him the best player in the league. Some others, like, you know, Max Kellerman did as well. A lot of people were speculating about a Clippers championship last year, as I was. Clippers, Lakers, Western Conference Finals, what everyone wanted. But the Clippers blew that 3-1 lead to the Denver Nuggets. And that not only... Yes, Paul George was the main target, but Kawhi also was target of criticism. He needed to show that he could perform under pressure again. This was his chance. And he certainly did. 45 points, 18 of 25 from the field, 5 of 9 from 3. And he had to do it again. In game 7, it was Kawhi's 6th, Luka's 1st. It was a great game. Great game 7 was, really. A heroic effort from Luka. We'll talk about that in a second. It was tied 81-81 in the third quarter when Kawhi had a baseline dunk that got the Clippers going, really. A 19-4 run, sparked a 19-4 run to end the third quarter. The Clippers held that lead throughout the fourth. They went even, I believe, both teams scored 26 points in the fourth. Final score, 126-111. Luka Doncic, 46 points, 7 rebounds, 14 assists in the loss. He scored or assisted on 77 points, which is the most in Game 7 history. Kawhi, 28 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists. Paul George, 22 points, 6 rebounds, 10 assists. How about that? Great all-around game from him. Marcus Morris added 23. You know, Kawhi, in the end, just had more help than Luka. I mean, Luka had help, but he didn't really have enough. Nobody else scored more than 18. Dorian Finney-Smith had 18 points, 10 rebounds. Porzingis had 16. Boban played big-time minutes in games 6 and 7. 14 points, 10 rebounds for him. I was glad to see him play. But Kawhi had help from the starters and bench help. 27-6 was the difference in bench points from the Clippers and Mavericks. And, you know, that was what it came down to. Depth and the supporting cast of the Clippers assisted Kawhi more so than the Mavericks did for Luka. So Kawhi didn't have to drop 45 again, but he had a great all-around game, 28, 10, and 9, almost a triple-double. And so the Clippers win that series 4-3. They will take on the Jazz in round two. And I'm going to say Clippers in seven. I am a little bit more confident now after I saw the Clippers come back from down 2-0 and 3-2 to win that series against the Mavericks. I think they're going to beat the Jazz. But the Jazz are tough to beat. They're a very fast-paced team. They shoot a lot of threes. You know, perfect modern-day team. So we'll see how that should be a very fun series. Nuggets-Blazers, let's talk about that. Game 6, Michael Porter Jr. was really, you know, the only reason Denver was in it. At least in the first quarter, at least. 22 points, 6 threes in the first quarter. That was so important because they would have been out of it. I mean, it would have been so much harder to come back. They kept the deficit under 15 points, you know, throughout the entire game, basically because Porter had 22 in the first quarter. If he scored an average like 6 or 8 or even 11, I mean, I think Denver would have been done. But Portland kept the lead throughout the first half and the third quarter. But towards the end of the third, the Nuggets made a run, cut the lead from 14 to 3. And it went back and forth in the fourth. It was tied 108-108 with about 6 minutes left. The Nuggets scored 11 straight points. That put the game away. Final score, 126-115. Jokic, 36-8-6. Playing like an MVP. Michael Porter Jr., 26. Just 4 points after that amazing first quarter. It was kind of sad. Monte Morris, 22 points, 9 assists off the bench. Damian Lillard had 28 points and 13 assists, but just 8 of 20 from the field, 3 of 11 from 3. All Blazers starters scored in double figures, but it wasn't enough. The Nuggets won 4-2, and they take on the Suns. That starts tonight, and I am going to say Suns in 6 for that one. If the Nuggets had Jamal Murray, I would say Nuggets in 7 probably, but they don't have him. Yes, they have depth at guard, but after what I saw the Suns do to the Lakers, I don't think I can bet against them in that series against a Jamal Murray-less Denver Nugget team. Let's talk about Lakers-Suns. Game 6, Jay Crowder hit 3 threes early, 14-5 start for Phoenix. Anthony Davis was a game-time decision with his, you know, strained groin, and he lasted 5 minutes and 25 seconds before he went back to the locker room and didn't come back. The Suns started out the game 21-10 with a 21-10 run, same as game 5. First quarter, at the end of the first quarter, it was 36-14. Devin Booker pulled a Michael Porter Jr. and scored 22 points, hit the 6 threes. Eventually, it was 46-18 in the second quarter at about 7.5-minute mark. Then, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope scored 8 points in a row, finally gave the Lakers some life offensively. Defensively, they were still all over the place. At least they had some sort of pulse offensively after that. They put a run together in the third, slowly cut the deficit throughout the period. A 35-point third quarter from the Lakers cut Phoenix's lead to 13, and that would end up being the final score difference anyway, so it didn't really matter. 113-100 was the final score. LeBron's first ever first-round exit in his storied career. That is just unbelievable. He's now 14-1. Devin Booker scored 47 points. How about that? LeBron, I thought he was too passive once AD went out. I feel like he didn't take over enough. I feel like he relied too much on his teammates because, oh my word, they looked like they had no clue what they were doing. At least in the first half, a little bit in the second half too. It was embarrassing. Kyle Kuzma, what were you doing? Kyle Kuzma played terrible. Andre Drummond didn't even play. Montrezl Harrell played 7 minutes. Marcus Gasol didn't score at all, and he started. The Lakers' supporting cast did not step up. It was pathetic. LeBron should have just gone 2018 mode, scored 45 points, and straight up carried them to a win. I believe he could have, but, you know, maybe that ankle is still bothering him a bit. It is, but could be maybe why he didn't have his foot on the gas pedal the whole game. The Laker bigs, as I just said, Marcus Gasol started, played 17 minutes, scored 0 points. Yeah, he had 7 assists, but he scored 0 points. Your starting center cannot score 0 points when DeAndre Ayton is on the other end. Montrezl Harrell was the first off the bench. 7 minutes, 2 points, 2 rebounds. Andre Drummond didn't play. Why? I don't understand what Frank Vogel is doing. Andre Drummond is an all-star. Obviously, not from what we saw this year, but he's got that capability, and he's an amazing rebounder, and he's like the one player on that Laker team who can keep DeAndre Ayton in check. Ayton shot like 75-80% from the field in that series. Averaged like 20 and 12, probably. Somewhere around there. Andre Drummond is the only one who could physically keep up with him. Montrezl Harrell's too small. Gasol's too... this is mean, but unathletic, but you know what I mean. Former Defensive Player of the Year, he just doesn't have that in him anymore. One of the main problems with this game, AD was clearly not good enough to go. Why did the trainers clear him? How did the trainers clear him? He was grimacing from the very first play. And, I mean, he tried as hard as he could. He really did for 5.5 minutes, and then he was just like, I mean, at that point, I don't understand how he even got cleared, because he was clearly not good to go. And it honestly could have messed things up for that Laker big rotation. Like, they could have had a game plan going in where Anthony Davis was, you know, playing in the entire game, and then he goes out 5 minutes in. Now everything's thrown out the window, and you don't know what to do with Gasol, Harrell, and Drummond. I feel like that's part of what happened. I think they would have been better off just keeping him out the entire time. After the game, LeBron didn't shake hands with the Suns. It's something to bring up. You can't ignore it. I mean, guys like Isaiah Thomas have had it held against them forever. If it were anybody else, we would be saying something about it. So we have to point it out for LeBron as well. Pretty classless act. I mean, he's looked to as a role model, you know, kind of the golden figure of the league. So you have to bring it up. I mean, it's not a big deal, but I'm going to call him out for it a little bit. Congratulations to the Phoenix Suns. Again, like I said, I think Suns and Six over the Nuggets is what's going to happen. Nets Bucks game one. Another quick injury. Harden left less than a minute into the game. He played 43 seconds, I believe. I believe he played 43 seconds. He pulled his hamstring again on the second play of the game. But it didn't matter because this was all Nets. 115 to 107 was the final score, but that was way closer than it felt. It was an 8-point difference, but it actually felt like 28. It was a game, really, until the fourth quarter when the Nets pulled away. KD had 29, Kyrie 25. Blake Griffin, maybe his best game of the season, best game of the Nets. 18 points and 14 rebounds. If he plays like that, they don't need Harden the rest of this series. Joe Harris, 19 points, 5 threes. The Nets' offensive skill is superior to anyone in the league. The Bucks are no match. No one is a match. Even without Harden, I think Brooklyn has the potential to roll to a championship, in my opinion. I think this series is going to end in 6. Possibly, it could possibly be 7 if Harden doesn't come back at all. He's out for game 2, but we don't know the length or the duration of what his timetable is. But I really can't see any series going to 7 games with the Brooklyn Nets. It's just too unfair. It is time to talk about Damian Lillard, because he lost for the 4th time in 5 years. Should he leave Portland? We previewed this a little bit last episode. I believe he should. I believe Dame time should be over in Portland. I'm not saying it is. But the Blazers haven't made major moves. They've lost in the first round 4 of the last 5 years. They just can't put enough around Lillard. And I don't think they're going to make big moves. After losing game 6, Lillard posted a picture with the caption, "How long should I stay dedicated? How long till opportunity meets preparation." It's a Nipsey Hussle quote. There are many different interpretations to this. One is, this is mine, how long should I stay dedicated to the Portland Trailblazers? He's arguably one of the top 10 players in the league, and he's lost in the first round 4 of the last 5 years. I've said that multiple times. He always falls short. Maybe not necessarily him, because he scored 55 and they lost. But the Blazers always fall short. They're in a small market. They can't get big names. They get big names that don't do anything. Like, big names that, like, aren't incredibly productive. Carmelo Anthony was productive in that series, but he's not, like, a superstar or anything anymore. Hassan Whiteside 2 years ago, I mean, he did okay, but Terry Stotts certainly wasn't taking this team to higher levels, so he and the Blazers mutually agreed to part ways. Stotts was 402 and 318 across his 9 seasons as head coach of Portland. And that was this was the only coach, the only head coach Damian Lillard has ever had in the NBA. He made 8 straight playoffs, which was the longest active streak in the NBA. Supposedly, Dame is going to have a big say in the next coach, which could mean 2 things. Either the Blazers want him to have a big say, just to, you know, kind of keep him happy, or Dame actually wants a big say so he can stay. But here's what happened. He said he wants Jason Kidd, but Jason Kidd's not going to go for the job. He's not going to go for the job. He literally said that. And here's how I read that situation. This paves the way for Damian Lillard to walk out the door. They say the Trailblazers give him a say. Lillard says who he wants. That candidate, not that the Blazers rejected him or anything, but that candidate doesn't want to coach him anymore. So now Lillard has an excuse to get out of Portland. That's how I read this situation. So I think it's time for Lillard to leave. And I know, you know, that's not really him. He's big on loyalty and all that stuff. I think ideally what he wants is another star coming to Portland, not him leaving and teaming up with someone. That's just not how he is. You know, he said he wouldn't do stuff like that, but, you know, people change their mind. We've also heard rumors, I believe Stephen A. Smith mentioned this, rumors that Karl Anthony Towns could end up in Portland, potentially a McCollum for Towns swap. I don't know if losing McCollum and gaining Towns would do much. I think if you kept McCollum, like traded, say, Nurkic, Covington, and a first-round pick for Towns, something like that, because, you know, NBA trades these days aren't even, ever. So if you trade those 3 assets to Minnesota for Towns, now you're talking. But how about this? Because there's speculation around the Lakers, too. I doubt Dame and LeBron would team up. But how about Damian Lillard for Anthony Davis? If I'm LeBron, I'm making that move. Davis can't stay on the court for more than 50% of the season. Damian Lillard rarely gets injured. And he's going to show up big time in the playoffs. Damian Lillard and LeBron James in the playoffs would be maybe the scariest duo we've seen in recent memory. I guarantee that's not going to happen, but it's just a thought. Let's talk about Anthony Davis, because the way people are starting to view him is changing. I saw him as a top 3 player before this season, and he certainly was not that this season. He wasn't even top 10, barely top 15, I don't know if he was top 15 even. He averaged 21.8 points, which was the 3rd lowest of his career since his first and second seasons in the league, and he averaged 7.9 rebounds per game, which was the lowest of his career. He only played 36 games, half of the schedule. 36 was half of 72 this year. He's just not available enough. He hasn't played more than 75 games in a season. And 75 games is pretty good, but that was like in his prime with New Orleans, and that really doesn't matter anymore. He's injury prone. It's a problem. When he's healthy, he's dominant. When he's not, he's not. And too often, he's not healthy, which means he's not dominant. Honestly, the Lakers got lucky last year because he was healthy when it mattered. And he showed up in the playoffs, averaged almost 28 and 10, 27.7, 9.7. 3.5 assists, 1.4 blocks, 1.2 steals, hit a game-winning buzzer beater in Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, on his way to winning his first NBA championship. But I think the Lakers' championship window is closed now. They're going to continue to contend. As long as you have LeBron James on your team, you're going to continue to contend. But LeBron's age, his ankle, Davis's health, the lack of surrounding pieces, they're all question marks. I think they're only going to get one championship, the one they had last year. And it's unfortunate because they have 2 generational talents. LeBron's age will eventually catch up. It will. He's about to be 37, which is ancient in NBA terms. It's absurd that he's played at this level for this long. It's unparalleled. But my 2 bold statements today, Anthony Davis got lucky. The Lakers got lucky with Anthony Davis last season, and the championship window was closed for the Los Angeles Lakers. To wrap up today, this day in NBA history, in 2000, Shaquille O'Neal scored 43 points against the Indiana Pacers in game one of the finals. We should be in the finals right now, bro. It's round two. It's June 7th. We should be in the finals right now, but we're not. It's weird. Anyway, that year, 2000, Shaq averaged 41.8 points per game in series openers. He had 46 in game one of the first round, 37 in game one of the second round, and 41 in game one of the Western Conference Finals. Of course, 43 in game one of the finals. That's pretty impressive. Happy birthday to Jordan Clarkson, Daniel House, and Allen Iverson. We will be back after each game three of each series is completed.